Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, your host for Soundbites on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and on Delmarva Public Radio, WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM. Last week, I moderated another Good Food Gathering town hall meeting, this time at the Franciscan Center in Baltimore, located at 101 West 23rd Street. This month, we discussed donating well and explored what we can do about the number of people in our communities who suffer from hunger on a daily basis, and even more, who confront the challenge of getting access to healthy food choices every day. How do we find creative ways to provide fresh, healthy food for all of our community members? We presented that question to our panelists, who work on innovative programs in the community. Joining us were Willie Flowers, Executive Director of the Park Heights Health Alliance, Christian Metzger, Executive Director of the Franciscan Center of Baltimore, Arthur Morgan, Founder of Gather Baltimore, and Danielle Jones-Dorsey, Executive Director of My Brother's Keeper. This town meeting was sponsored by the Center for Livable Futures Food and Faith Project, Interfaith Power and Light, and The Mark Steiner Show. And here's that conversation. What I'd like to do very quickly as we talk about this concept is to just go down the table very quickly and talk a bit about how your organization functions and what you mean by giving well and what your thoughts are about that, how that fits into this concept. Christian, you're the host. Let's start with you.
Here at the center, I can tell you that the ethos of the sisters when they founded the center was really to treat people with dignity and respect. And that ethos is passed through all of our services and needs to be seen as well in the food programs that we provide the community. Here at the center, we have a soup kitchen that feeds nearly 500 people a day, give or take, depending on the time of the month and what the weather's like and things like that. We also have a food pantry, which is the largest in the state of Maryland in direct service to folks. We're on pace to give out 8,000 bags of groceries this year. And our opinion of giving well is giving to the clients a nutritious, a balanced meal, as well as an option. We give people an option when they get a pantry bag to choose healthy or to choose the regular bag if they would like. So we're giving some options as well. And I think that all fits in with the dignity and respect that we try to treat people with. Now, where we receive that food from is mostly from the community. We're very much community supported here. Organizations like Arthur's, who does gleaning, and other organizations, supermarkets, just every person that has a farm sometimes brings by some things for us to use. We get bread donated from all over the place in bakeries. So the food comes to us, but we make sure it's good quality and it goes out to our clients.
And let's go to the end of the table. Danielle Jones-Dorsey, who's the executive director of My Brother's Keeper.
My Brother's Keeper is also founded on the premise of respect for each and every human being. We started 34 years ago as a soup kitchen and food pantry. During my tenure, we are focusing now on providing healthy and nutritious food to our guests, which is served family style in our dining room. We serve about 70 people per day for lunch. We're very concerned about nutritious foods for our guests because we're clear that what you eat is also linked to your physical and mental health. In terms of giving well, we also want to help folks to begin to have access to food in such a way that they provide food. So later in the program, I'd like to discuss our gardens and to discuss our cooking classes. Meanwhile, we receive our food from various donations. Churches who have a meal and they have food left will contact My Brother's Keeper. We receive food from restaurants. We receive food from church groups. We also purchase food from the Maryland Food Bank.
Thank you. And Arthur Morgan, who is the founder of Gather Baltimore, a really unique enterprise. So Arthur, talk a bit about what that is.
Gather Baltimore was kind of created just from an urban farming project that we had going, Hamilton Crop Circle. And basically, we were just farming in the city and were growing food at schools, vacant lots, trying to get, you know, food to people in the community. And just also by seeing how much food we were growing, there was a tremendous amount of food that was left over. So then we started having a farm stand down at the farmers market under Jones Falls, and we met a lot of other farmers. We met other small city farmers, large-scale farmers, people that were in the city and also in the country. And we saw that there was so much excess food that was just not going anywhere, but there was good, healthy, nutritious food, fruits and vegetables, that we started just taking, like in the beginning, we just had a pickup truck and we started taking it to, you know, other places like Franciscan Center and other distribution points. But then it grew so fast just by seeing the amount of food that still wasn't getting gleaned in the fields or the amount of excess that was just everywhere. We found that it was really important to not just give someone a plate of food, but actually hopefully give them a bag of food that would be enough food, healthy food for, you know, a family of four for like a week. So our biggest thing right now is just we're growing so fast. I received my OSI fellowship, and that gave me 18 months to get kind of up and rolling. But in 18 months, we have just, it's almost out of control. It's so much food. So many people need it. So our biggest issues now are becoming sustainable. We usually do IKEA bags. We ask for like a $6 donation. No one's turned away. If you do have money, then we definitely need it to keep going. If you bring your bag back, it's $5 every week. If you don't have money, then no one's turned away. You still get food. But now by the huge amounts of foods, we're also trying to partner with more organizations like the ones that are here.
And Willie Flowers, who is Executive Director of the Park Heights Community Health Alliance.
So our program is called Urban Oasis. It's one part of what we do. Our organization was created around responding to the medical model of dysfunctions with health disparities in the city. As most of you know, Park Heights is in the middle of a food desert, a literary desert, and every kind of other desert. Now, we could stay focused on that, but we champion solutions, and one of those solutions is to inspire the self-determination of the people. And through our Urban Oasis program, we're not a recipient of food, but we are a donor of food to the community and those who want to participate. We do that by growing food in a few locations in our neighborhood. I guess our demonstration location is our back lot, which was once called Needle Park because people would do drugs there. But now we have a quarter acre plot that we grow food from March until November. And we produce in a setting that we call, it's a CSA, cooperative setting, that allows people to either pay into it or you could work, that we call a sweat equity CSA. And we did our first pickup yesterday. We have 50 people on the list that we hope to deliver to. In addition to that, we oversee the farmers market, Pimlico Racetrack. It's called the Park Heights Community Farmers Market. And we participate also with the Family League in the summer food program. So our goal is just to create access to food for people in the community. Obviously, in a situation like that, when there's not a quality place to get food, and corner stores galore who offer nutrient-deficient food, our goal is to provide some sense of security when it comes to access to food.
Well, we raised a lot of important issues here. I'm glad I wanted to do it this way first, to kind of spread these out on the table and then kind of pull them back in. Given the title of tonight's program, what I'm curious about from all of you is what you think that the power, need, and limits of giving are. There are a lot of people, more and more people who really need a food, and we'll talk a little bit about how anybody who works in a soup kitchen has seen the lines grow and seen the number of families with children and mothers with children in those lines you didn't see as much before as you see now, more and more children. So the need is there. But I'm really curious about, because it has to happen, but what are its power? What is its power? What are its needs? But what are the limits of it?
I think one weakness is the setup of communities now. And communities like the one I work in, you don't trust or you don't have people that you can feel secure about just going to their house and asking for a cup of sugar. I grew up in a neighborhood where you didn't feel insecure about anything. And then the community I live in, you might not want people to know that you need a cup of sugar. So we're kind of in a crazy situation now. So I think that organizations like the ones represented here and others being a supplement to creating outlet that, you know, offers a dignified way of nourishing yourself, or forget about nourishment, just so that you can eat.
Chris, what are you about to say?
Well, I think you bring up an excellent point about need, because here at the Franciscan Center, we've seen that need just constantly grow. Last year, we served almost 94,000 meals during the course of the year, and we're on pace this year for 100.
How many days a week is that you do?
That's 5 days a week.
5 days a week, 94,000 meals.
94,000 meals. So this week, or this year, we're on pace for 110,000. So that just shows you that increase alone, significant increase, which is, you know, we need to find the resources to continue to feed people on that level, which we have been able to do, and it's all because of partnerships, really, that we're able to accomplish that. But last year, in terms of bags of groceries we gave out almost 6,000 bags of groceries last year, and we're on pace to do well over 8,000 this year. This is a direct result of government cuts and everything else that goes along with it, and much of the burden does fall, when that happens, onto faith-based organizations like the Franciscan Center and others here to take care of that gap in society.
Mark, I'd also like to weigh in on the power of giving.
Yes.
At My Brother's Keeper, I have been amazed at the giving side and what it does for the persons who are providing food or who are volunteering to prepare and serve the food. Giving has been very transformative. We have persons now who are very committed to this whole mission of food access. So I hope that your listeners are very, very clear that whatever they do, however small or large it may be, giving is extremely important, and it allows each of our organizations to survive, thrive, and be able to serve our brothers and sisters in a very humane way. On the need side, there is definitely an increase in the need, especially for nutritious and healthy foods. So we take our hats off to the gleaners and all persons who are interested in nutritious and healthy foods being provided to soup kitchens and food pantries.
I think a big thing is you don't really, realize that a lot of the people who you see in line now are maybe not the people that you would have seen before. I mean, times are lean for just about everybody, and it is becoming more difficult to pay your bills or to afford healthy food. It seems like people will, pay for just about everything else before they really worry about food. I can't do what I'm doing, though, without the volunteers. I mean, the amount of, manpower it takes to go out into a field and glean the food, or people to run a farm stand. I mean, volunteers are a huge part of what we're doing. Also, the volunteers who run the farm stands in the neighborhoods. You have to have manpower and people who identify what's going on and people who can kind of, see what's going on in the neighborhood. But you also need people from that neighborhood who are helping the community and helping the neighborhood. It's difficult for just an organization to come as a group into a neighborhood that they're not familiar with and just be there and then leave, because there's a lot of other issues that maybe we won't talk about this evening, but there's a lot of other stuff going on that you see when you do go into a neighborhood and you're there for, a day running a farm stand. There's a lot of other things that we're not discussing, but, it has a lot to do with what's going on with or what people are doing with their money or, what else is going on.
A couple of things. I want to go over to Willie's nodding head for a moment, saying yes, to pull that out, but I want to ask you, Arthur, to be clear about for our listeners and the audience, when you're talking about gleaning, you're talking about you and volunteers going into farmers' fields, taking the food they'd either throw away or get rid of.
Yep.
And you're talking about thousands of pounds of food that gets rid of.
More than
that. You pick up, you can describe the number of cantaloupes you've got.
Yeah.
You should go out in the fields and actually pick them. So, I mean, that's why you say you need volunteers.
Need manpower.
Describe a bit about what that's like.
And also, just I think a lot of people don't realize how much farmland there is around, besides just the city lots that are going on. But there's a huge amount of farmland that surrounds Baltimore City and Baltimore County. And the amount of food that is being grown and the amount of food that just the farmer can only afford to pay so many people to farm that land and harvest that land and, go to market and sell it. So there's actually more food being grown that doesn't even go to market, that just sits in a field, and it's there. He or she would absolutely rather that food go somewhere. The big thing why our relationships are so good with the farmers is the people that I'm working with and serving aren't his normal customers. I'm going into areas where these people do not normally go to farmers markets or aren't a part of a CSA or something like that. So the farmer is very thankful also that someone is getting this food and appreciates the food. But a big concern for me too is to generate some type of understanding about how hard, farming is and the importance of healthy food.
No, I agree. But there's another level of it that allows some level of sovereignty of neighborhoods that I think should be just made local. I mean, we have enough vacant lots in Baltimore City that weeds grow in and the mysterious ghetto palms grow in. And all we're saying is that if weeds can grow in it and these palm trees can grow in it, tomatoes can grow in it. And when people, particularly children, see that process, it's not intimidating anymore. And it's manageable in a quarter acre lot versus a the intimidation of a farm. Mimi is here from the Baltimore Homa community, and they recently purchased a farm, and they're producing food out of that farm. And these types of ideas coming together to reduce the challenges of food are important. But I do think that growing food in lots in your neighborhood is a beneficial way of beautifying and also creating a way to get access to quality food.
There are many people who see the people who line up to go to soup kitchens or to get bags of groceries in places like the Franciscan Center or Viva House or My Brother's Keeper, wherever that might be, to come and eat and get food. But our society is full of people who are so estranged from one another that we don't know the others that aren't us. And that's a racial thing. It's also a class thing that has to do with poverty. So, I mean, I'd like you to talk just a minute, just to get a feel, a sense, an emotional, a visceral piece of who the people are that are being fed by you and by the food that comes in.
I can tell you here at the center that someone was mentioning earlier that the kind of the face of poverty has changed now. It's just not what you would think anymore. It's your neighbors. It's sometimes family. It's friends. It's different. And so here at the Franciscan Center, I mean, we're serving the entire Baltimore community. So people are welcome to come from anywhere in Baltimore to come for a meal. But we do see that, you know, there's a good chunk of working poor that's starting to be the biggest growing population that we're starting to serve. People with jobs. Many people have jobs and come to the center to fill gaps. We help with things like evictions and utilities and prescriptions and birth certificates and IDs and dental and all these financial assistance programs that we're helping fill gaps for people. But, I mean, statistically, if you want to talk demographics, here at the center, we're seeing 90% African American and probably 9% Caucasian, and then like a percent mix. And most of the folks are 40 to 55 is the major age range. I would say it's pretty split between male and female. We see almost 50-50 in here in terms of male, female. And that is a huge shift because 5 years ago when I came here to the center, it was like 75% male, 25% women. So it has shifted significantly. And the number of single mother households is growing as well. And that's something that we're seeing significant here as well. So.
Mark, at My Brother's Keeper, when you come to our building and you first see our guests, and we're very serious about referring to the persons who come to us as our guests, you may see a person that you think is an alcoholic, a drug addict, or a streetwalker. But as you get to know our guests who are hungry, this is what you learn. Many persons are developmentally delayed. They may be suffering from mental illness. They may be under the influence of prescription drugs, and having a meal is immediately necessary. You will have persons who we see who are coming to us as they have completed dialysis. We serve lunch, and on many occasions, there are men who come to have lunch with us, and they go to work immediately after their meal. Summer is starting, and we will definitely see children. And as I mentioned earlier, our dining room is family style, so it is not unusual to see a family sit down together and have their meal. I think it's important for the audience and for your listening audience, Mark, to know that the people that we see and serve are their neighbors, and we're located right near the county line. We have 20% Caucasian, 80% African Americans. We do see the split of male and female. It's almost equal. But we are surprised at how many people come to us from the surrounding counties, Anne Arundel, Howard, and Baltimore County, to come to also have a meal with us.
That's, I think, important to feel. I mean, this is what we're talking about here, and that you all described. You described by the Christian by the numbers of bags of groceries and the meals that you serve, how it's exponentially growing in terms of what's happening in our societies.
Well, in our situation, I guess the givers are the kind of the center of our garden, the CSA, because we have probably 99% volunteers at our garden, so we have an interesting mix of people who are committed to this mission about food, about expanding farming, and about teaching folk. And they come in outside of Park Heights to come on Saturday mornings or during the week to farm and to share the food. The receivers, in the case of the folks who get the food, are in the neighborhood. So our the people we feed from the neighborhood are 100% African American, and you know, they benefit from it. I have a very and some people from the neighborhood participate and some don't, but they do know that the food is there. In 2012, during that growing season, we invite people consistently to participate, and we give food to families, but this one family did not return until the night before, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it was dark. And they just wanted food for the next day. They particularly wanted collard greens for Thanksgiving. Luckily, you know, the farmers, that is the biggest day for collard greens at the farmers market. Luckily, I had collards in the in my car. But my point is that the trigger didn't go off until they really needed it, and I was happy to provide it that night. So those are the some of the anecdotes.
What has to change? In other words, look, there are tens of thousands of people in Baltimore City and more in our surrounding metropolitan area and in the D.C. suburbs as well that need to eat and need to come to places like the ones you have that all four of you run at some level to find food to eat, whether it's to buy a bag of lean groceries for a week that costs $6 or to have a meal with a family or whatever that is. And people need to give to that to make it happen. Your place wouldn't exist without that. None of your places would. Viva House wouldn't exist without that. All these places wouldn't exist without that. I'm just curious what you think has to change. Are we always going to exist with a model of a social service model where people have to be fed? Do you know what I mean? I mean, are we in a position where that? I know we have to do it because we're here now and it has to be done. People can't starve. But is this where we are? Is this the future? Is this what we're going to become?
I mean, in my opinion, I mean, it's what it is now, and as far as I can see in the future. I mean, there's the plans to end homelessness, the plans to end hunger, things like that. They're showing that they're not really, you know, making a huge impact. When we can see our numbers rising year after year after year in our food programs, to me, seeing it firsthand, it's discouraging, but at the same time, I know that we're helping people that really need it. Now, some of the things that I feel would need to change, at least from where we are, I'm not going to get political. I think our donors' kind of perception, and I think that what they think of as donating to organizations like us needs to change. That's one of the things that we've been working very hard at. Now, we do food drives, and we accept food, and we try to use everything that comes through the center. But when we do our own food drives now, and we're in charge of our own food drives, we're asking people to donate healthier items. We give a list of items that we're looking for people to donate. We're talking whole grain pastas, brown rices, things that low sodium and things of that nature. It's no longer, we don't want the Vienna sausages anymore. We don't want to hand that stuff out to folks anymore. We don't even have that stuff on our pantry shelves any longer. We're really concentrating on getting better quality food to folks because, as we all know, food is sort of the foundation for health issues and for everything else that goes around it. So if we can take out preservatives, if we can take out as many salty and fat items, it's going to help in a public forum, especially when you're serving as many meals as we do here, because we have a lot of influence, I would say, over people's substance that they're taking in when they come here every day for a meal. They're coming here for their groceries, all that stuff. So I feel as if we make it a better quality, it's going to change their quality of life as well.
Let me go down the end of the row here from Denise and William. The question is this where we are? Is this where we stay?
This is where we are, but it is not where we stay. I think that this project, for instance, demonstrates it is important for we as a people and as a nation to begin to revisit our whole food security / insecurity strategy, not only for my guests, but for all of us in this room and in your listening audience. One of the things that we do at My Brother's Keeper is to begin to help our neighbors and our guests understand that they can grow their own food. And we have these little bitty gardens. And even if it's tomatoes, they talk about Mrs. Dorsey's famous beefsteak tomato sandwiches, that we grow our own food and begin to feed ourselves with the food that we're growing. And it harkens back, Mark, to a period long before you were born.
You don't know about that.
But the during the Depression, I asked my mother, were you hungry? Did you starve? And she said, Danny's, the truth is we didn't even know there was a depression because I lived on the family farm and we had our food to eat. The key here is teaching people how to grow it, teaching people how to purchase differently, to place different demands on our food security system, and teaching people how to prepare it. I have to tell you, I have to throw a plug out to be to the program. We received a $200 grant a couple of years ago because there were gleaners bringing fresh produce to our community, and we observed that guests walked past the fresh produce because it was foreign. They didn't know how to prepare it. So we got a little bitty grant. It was only $200. But we have a woman in our community who is fantastic, Miss Dorothy Kent. She set up her Sterno. She cooked the food and showed people how to prepare zucchini, how to saute the squashes in a different way, and so on and so forth. I firmly believe and would not have been here this evening if I did not believe that we can change our opinion of our food security system, and each and every one of us has a responsibility to insist that there is healthy food not only for our neighbors, but for ourselves.
You're listening to last week's Good Food Gathering Town Hall Meeting at the Franciscan Center in Baltimore, where we explore donating well in ways we can provide healthy food to all of our communities, both growing of their own and in donations. We have to take a very brief break right here, but don't go away. There's more of this fascinating conversation coming up in just a minute. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And this hour, you're listening to last week's Good Food Gathering Town Hall Meeting at the Franciscan Center of Baltimore. We explored the idea of donating well, the ways we can provide fresh, healthy food for all of our community members, and how we can build communities that can sustain themselves as well as continue to feed the people who need to be fed. Joining us were Willie Flowers, Executive Director of the Park Heights Health Alliance, Christian Metzger, Executive Director of the Franciscan Center of Baltimore, Arthur Morgan, founder of Gather Baltimore, and Danny's Jones Dorsey, Executive Director of My Brother's Keeper. And here's the rest of that conversation.
Go ahead, Willie.
We emphasize the self-determination of folks. That's where it starts. Once people understand and are not intimidated by growing food, I think we'll be better off because, you know, if you grow it, you know, you'll have it. The other component of that, now, it is intimidating to see a bag full of greens or kale or whatever you eat. It's very intimidating. So the other piece of it, our food justice consultant is here, Sasha Jones. The other piece of it is to demonstrate how to prepare the food because young families don't have that type of finesse. And we do it through our program. We have an end-of-the-year celebration called the Brassica Festival that basically celebrates greens. And we do demonstrations on food. We do education around sustainability and what it means. And people walk out empowered. That's at the grassroots level. Now, at this bureaucratic nonprofit level, we just have to break the silos.
So what do you mean?
That means that this is the first time I met these guys.
We are in silos.
Yeah, we are in silos. Everybody's fending for themselves. There's a tradition of that. I don't know where it started. Most of us are exposed to the religious community, and the most divided community areas is our churches and our synagogues and that kind of thing, for whatever reason. But that trend continues, and until we break the silos, we won't know what's easy about gleaning, what's easy about serving people. And we can share that and go after the same money and not duplicate services as much. But we have to be unified, if nothing else, on that subject of food for people who don't have it.
Yeah, Arthur, I know you look like you're chomping the bit, so go ahead.
When you were talking about the divide before, like a big part of what we try and do also is where we set our farm stands up, you want the volunteers to also be the people who are receiving the food. So we are dealing with transportation issues, but the people who receive this food, we want them to come out and to the farms and glean and learn what's what. You know, at the farm stands, we try and have a tent set up so that people are being shown, you know, what the food, how to prepare it, you know, different ways to do it. Something that's a little crazy, and I'm drifting for a second, but even people who have money and are living a certain way still make terrible choices with what they eat. So a lot of people who are doing some things.
Well, let me also add the point really about the silos is that we don't have the budget to do the advertising and marketing, but every McDonald's does.
Yeah, McDonald's
can. We spend our day trying
everybody.
If you close down one McDonald's, they'll be okay.
That's it.
I would love to be just. me and a couple other groups be the people who just do the gleaning and then work with the other organizations. But it still is good, like when we partner up, to say, hey, how about if you come out, you know, a day and just see what it is that we do, just like we would come and see what you do a day. But certain groups are very good at what they do. You know, there's a lot of relationships that are built through trust and stuff like that, too. You have to be, I always tell the stories, it's really, you have to be careful about going and gleaning. Farmers aren't just going to let anybody come out on their land and go crazy with 100 people, you know, doing whatever. It took a long time to build those relationships, but the food is there. But I'm not nearly as good at distributing as I am with gleaning. So, you know, I'm trying to work with more groups, that's for sure.
We do. Do live in this very competitive society, in a siloed society, so that if you're on the east side or the west side, if you are in a mostly black community or not black community, if you're in the Franciscan Center versus my brother's keeper over in Lower Park Heights, that everybody's kind of scrambling for the same foundation and rich man's dollar to fund our work to make sure that people get to eat. So what is the possibility when we talk about just giving and feeding that a cooperative model could be developed in a city like ours? Are we just so, is that impossible to do given everybody's structure?
I would have to believe that it is. I don't know any example of where it has happened successfully at a citywide level, but I think it's worth a try. It's consistent across the board, not just in the local food movement, but in human services in general. We're all just on our own, you know, so I'm hoping to change that. Everybody else does it. The hospital association does it. Every law firm does it. So I think it's time for us to come together and do it because we're delivering food to you. You going to help us out? I said yes.
I mean, Casey, and you run this big Franciscan Center and my brother's keeper. Could that happen?
Well, I think so. I mean, collaborations, there's strength in collaboration. I mean, it's just that's what funders like United Way and other people are really looking for now because the silos were built, I think, because of the funding atmosphere is kind of the reason why these silos were built in the first place. As the money continues to decrease for nonprofits like ourselves, we are forced to start looking at collaborative ways of tackling some of these issues. We're using right now, the Franciscan Center is kind of doing a very small model of the CSA. So we have right now 30 families that we provide a CSA to over the course of a 22-week growing season. And we provide a lot of education and some basic utensils and all kinds of great things along the way. And we're trying to see if this model is something that can be sustainable in society in terms of getting healthier foods into this population and food deserts and places like that. So we're trying to work with that, but that's something that we're collaborating with John Hopkins Center for a Livable Future with. That's something we're collaborating with United Way with, University of Maryland Extension Program. There's a lot of organizations that are involved in this. So if this works out and shows that it can, you know, provide food and people do take it seriously and they are craving this food, maybe this is a model we may be able to move forward with to not only improve public health in general, but to maybe solve some of the issues around hunger.
Go ahead, Denise.
Mark, I was going to share that Christian and I had an opportunity to attend a luncheon with a group of people who are working on a project called Food Bridge, just regular citizens who are concerned about distribution and access. That collaborative spirit is still with me. There is a real opportunity to collaborate, and there is a desire to do that. In addition to that, my brother's keeper, we're much smaller than the Franciscan Center. We're located in zip code 21229, and when I became executive director, my first question was, who else is offering food pantries and soup kitchens in our area? Can we work together? And in fact, we do. We meet the third Tuesday of each month, and we're the Neighborhood Pantry Area Councils. The goal there was that when someone came to any one of our doors, they would know where they could get food 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So the will, the desire to collaborate is there. It simply requires that we all sit down and think through strategically, how do you make this all happen?
I was thinking about some things you were saying, Denise, and you were also saying, Willie, about gathering community in to work at this together. And one of the things you said, Denise, I think that it can't be emphasized enough, and you both mentioned it, which has to do with cooking. And we had generations of people where the idea of cooking and how to cook was passed on from usually mother to daughter, but in some cases fathers and sons as well, but was passed on from generation to generation. And because of the dislocation in America, and I want to put it out, the deindustrialization, the increased poverty, people not having homes and places to be together, that art's been lost for many people. I mean, are we making too much of that, Denise? I mean, do you think that's real? And because you were talking about cooking lessons, and you were talking about cooking lessons. Well,
I think it's very real. We had 500 pounds of white potatoes. The younger women did not know how to peel and julienne those potatoes to make French fries. So we decided right then and there we were going to teach folks, you can make healthy French fries, and McDonald's is not the only deal in town. It is absolutely imperative that we show folks how to cook.
And I take it to another level. It's important to show them that you can eat the entire potato because the skins taste pretty good.
That's right.
Fried as well.
The skin.
So that's called sustainability, right?
That's it.
And we do the same thing with garlic, for example. We ate off of, I guess, education of Spilly, and people know Spilly. We ate greens garlic greens as well as garlic scapes this year, and in the pursuit of eating the garlic that everybody eats. But before it's over, we would have eaten every piece of the garlic. So that's important around sustainability. But you wouldn't know that if you were not growing the food. So I agree that there is if you wake up hungry, you just want to eat. So if that means $2 for a McDonald's burger versus cooking something, you might have to do that.
Whenever we think of food pantries and feeding people and people doing urban gardens, we don't think about it happening in poor black communities with black folks doing it. We think about it's white people doing it. You know what I'm saying? That is the perception. And I think it's important to kill that perception and to change that perception and that reality. And that's part of what you're talking about.
Well, again, I do think that there is a history or a legacy of black folks just going to your cousin's house or your grandmother's house that may not exist now. And not to say that you didn't need that support, but that was like I didn't have a hungry day in my life until I got to college. And they didn't serve, and they didn't serve in the cafeteria on after 12 o'clock on Sunday. So, and I ended up eating crunchy munch that tastes like steak. So, but the point is that there's somebody's grandmother up the street that would feed you. It's out of their commitment to people.
Why don't we see what folks out here want to say to us?
So my name is Mimi, and I was born in 1936. And when I was born, there were only neighborhood markets. And in fact, I grew up on Quantico Avenue, and on that corner where the community center is was the Park Heights Meat Market. Now, this is the 40s. Every corner had a food market. There was the fruit and vegetables and the pickles that you got in the barrel and whatever else you bought, your potatoes and stuff. And there was a fish market going down Quantico Avenue. Everybody you needed were in neighborhood stores, corner stores. In Baltimore, you see that. You know, there are all these fronts. That's not even, I was born in 36, so it's not 100 years ago. Right. That model, I'm not saying that everything works. Everything, this gleaning thing is awesome and growing. I grow my food in pots because I don't have a garden, but I grow the food in flower pots. So what I envision is real food as businesses where the churches can do it, the communities can do it, a family can do it, individuals can do it. And it's not like an owner and a worker, you know, on a job, but people getting together and actually having profit sharing. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be like that, but mostly they were families. I mean, my father's business, every one of his sisters and brothers worked there. The father worked together. Everybody did to build something that was needed in the community. And I see that as a serious, viable thing to happen, because it's not just giving. We have to earn a living. We live in a moneyed society. Now, I'm not for that. That's not, would not be my choice if you wanted to know where, how to live. And in my opinion, it's not about that at all. That's where we're at right now. And we can also share, just like what the Franciscans do. If you don't have the money, you still get. That's the way it's meant to be.
So let me pick up where maybe left off, and the idea of having the corner stores. I remember there's neighborhoods in Park Heights then too. We used to be a butcher shop. My grandfather and I used to go to the butcher shop all the time on Park Heights Terrace and walk around the corner to go get to it. We were a lumber shoot. My grandpa would pick out the chicken he wanted. They'd take the chicken out and they'd slaughter it on spot, take the feathers off, take it home, and you cook the chicken. I mean, that was just the way it was. We can't go backwards, but are those models things we can develop now that can go forward, that we can build something different? I mean, sometimes you can't always stop Walmart and McDonald's, but you can do things on your own outside of them.
I believe you can. You know, we did our garden for the first time in 2009, 2010, and I don't think anybody thought it was going to last. We've been around, among other things. In our generation, I think people in this room could probably remember, I'm looking around, when you had cigarette smoke in every bar, even on airplanes. But they broke the back of that, and that was a revolution in our generation. So I think anything is possible.
I can share with you one of the assets that we're very proud of in zip code 21229 is the Green Street Academy, which is a public school, and the young people, they grow vegetables, they have a hoop house. They grow tilapia fish. They have a chicken coop. And what's so exciting for me is that the young people, as well, we became aware of it because they said, if we have more than we can use, would my brother's keeper be interested in it? And of course we said yes. Well, we're still waiting, and we're still waiting. And we're okay with that because the young people were able to sell every bit of their produce to the area restaurants, and we were excited about that. It also appears to me that there's opportunities for more of the spontaneous fresh air markets. I love that concept. I think that works in today's world with today's vibe.
In terms of the corner stores, even when I was growing up, there was still very much the corner store atmosphere and everything. And here in Baltimore, I'm not from Baltimore originally. I'm from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And it's a little slower. It's a little nice. You know, it's kind of the way things are still done up there. But in Baltimore, it's very much different. And I think to have any change in Baltimore, I feel like the corner stores now, or what they consider bodegas also, they don't have an interest whatsoever in carrying fresh produce and things like that. Before we could change that atmosphere, I think you need to have a buy-in from those corner store folks and everything else. Now, nonprofits aren't going to have the influence, I think, to do that. So that would have to be from a higher entity, maybe a government subsidy. Who knows what it means to get them behind something like this. But I do think that using corner stores and getting fresh produce in the corner stores is a way of breaking the food desert.
There was a neighborhood that we did a story with in Reservoir Hill that had a community garden that was started, two community gardens were started, and they built a playground as well. They actually negotiated with and forced the corner store to start selling the produce that the people wanted from the gardens and other places. I mean, it can be done. Let me go to some other folks here over here.
Well, I was just going to say, but you have to compete, you know, with the 7-Eleven at Remington and 29th that has a sign up that says, you know, for $4, you can get a 16-inch ready-made fresh pizza that you can take home to your family and have them eat. And, you know, life is so crazy. People have their issues. It's such a bigger issue. It is about, you know, everything broader than just the food. And it's just, how do you fight against that when the accessibility of having something just at your fingertips is there? You know, the education you need behind it, it's so hard to fight against that.
It's easy. Like I said earlier, the advertising is tough to fight against, but you just have to.
You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to have some grassroots muscle.
And apparently someone has started somewhere, because when you go into the local supermarket, it might be Giant Food, maybe Wegmans, it may be Safeway. I don't want to give anybody a plug. But you can go to the produce section, and all the vegetables are already cut up. there's encouragement to dip apples in caramel. So apparently, and I do agree, that we as a people, we begin to drive demand and communicate to corporate what it is that we want. I have to tell you, I was so stunned when I went into my favorite supermarket and they had everything ready for me to make soup with.
We're all kind of doing things on the ground floor to sort of educate folks. Most of our meals now are made from fresh produce, and we make sure that people know that it's fresh produce coming in. We do the CSA project. We do produce drops where we will have 15,000 pounds of fresh produce and put it out in our parking lot and have an open-air market for the neighborhood. That, I think, is like experiential. It's something that they're seeing, that they're learning. We're giving them recipes. We're giving them food demonstrations. We do all sorts of things like that here at the center because we are really trying to educate people that this is a good way to go and that you really should be doing this. And we really are trying to make the CSA project sort of a generational type thing where we want them to get their kids involved in cooking with them and spending time and eating at home as a family more. I mean, that's part of the project and part of the focus. So I think education from us, and it's not pushing it in their face. It's letting people learn at their own pace.
There's nothing worse than people who are on their high horse about what you should eat and become food fascists.
Oh yeah, it's terrible.
Are you kidding?
but that tomato out of the garden tastes a lot better than that pizza she's talking about.
Amen.
And you can even throw that mater on the pizza and it'll taste a lot better. You know.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Lane, and I am formerly homeless, a former client of the Franciscan Center, and a lot of what
Praise
you
God.
Said really touches on me, because when we do our budgets, you pay your BGE, you pay your rent, you have to get to work, and if there's any money left, you buy food. And I think that we need to demand more from the government. If you can pay $9.2 million for a drone, that could be used for some of your programs. And what Ms. Dorsey said about 24-hour access, that's something that you don't have in Baltimore for healthy food. And if you're on the street and you're getting your meal at lunch, you don't have it in the evening. And I think it would be good to have a database or a website where you could list all these healthy food services in one place so people know where they go. Thank you.
That's a great idea.
That's great.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that's another way of breaking the silos that we have. I agree with you.
Thank you all so much for being here. And I think that you brought up a lot of ideas. You brought up a lot of challenges. And the thing that came up again and again was sustainability, also empowerment. And you mentioned that you had a partnership with schools. I think that one of the things it's easy to sort of leave out of the process or not to spend more time talking about is that why do we need so much intervention for math and science? Well, cooking with your family is the best intervention for math and science.
Yes.
You learn food literacy, you learn about measurement, you learn so much about how things interact and that they change and when you apply heat, when you apply cold, and that we don't have that and we're seeing that impact our schools. So what I would like to know is, I really do feel that Baltimore is a city that does not need to have hunger, and we might be the first city in this country if we choose that. And I'm choosing that this city will be a city that doesn't have hunger. But I think the sustainable model is going through the youth and their families. And what recommendations or what do you know of that can help mediate and attack that? Or you know, what's the bright idea that there hasn't been anybody to fuel yet, but it's a bright idea that should be talked about?
I agree with you 100%. More importantly, beyond the STEM reality of family cooking, you also accomplish a very significant a reality that we're all affected by, and that's pollution. When you eat at home, you're not going, because you know 90% of the paper you see is from a fast food restaurant or whatever. So if you eat at home, you don't have that problem. More importantly, you're at home and you're discussing your day. That's meditative. That's and beyond that, you pray. I think it's a suitable advocacy to inspire people to at least sit down and have supper again.
You asked, what is the one bright idea? So you are allowing me to dream and create. The bright idea that I would offer is for the summer food program that feeds children, that next summer we have summer food camps that allow the children to grow food, to prepare food, to eat the food that they prepare. And in their big celebration, their community comes in and eat. That would be my creative dream. Somebody give me some money. Or maybe we should look at that USDA budget again for funding. But I'm serious about that. The summer food feeding program could be a collaboration of helping our children know how to grow it, harvest it, prepare it, and share it.
I don't think that's a reasonable idea at all. That seems awfully workable to me. Let me ask you all very quickly, just close it out for us, pull this together in terms of giving and change, how they fit together. Why doesn't the host start first?
Giving and change here at the center, the way that that looks is we're so dependent upon the community. And what's really interesting is that we are a giver and we are a receiver here. And that's what kind of makes such an interesting dynamic, because we really need the assistance of the community to support the community. And that's basically what it comes down to. So there is a lot of ways for people to get involved. There's a lot of ways for people to donate. It doesn't always have to be money. It doesn't have to be goods. It can be your time. I mean, like, everyone here needs volunteers. We all run on volunteerism as a backbone of our organizations. To me, it's the community caring for each other. It's something that's been sort of the theme throughout the room tonight, from the questions of everyone, taking care of ourselves within the community, building some structure, building some infrastructure that's looking at generational change. I'm all for that. So if people ever want to partner or they have any ideas and they think the Free Franciscan Center can be involved, I'm more than open to collaborating.
Arthur Morgan.
Everybody just needs to volunteer. I mean, I can't do what I'm doing without volunteers. We're having a spaghetti fundraising dinner. I'm trying to buy a freezer. I mean, everything I do, I need help. But, you know, what I'm doing, anybody could do. It's not that difficult. I mean, it's pretty simple to come
up
with.
What you're doing is pretty powerful.
Well, I can't do it without help. I always say Facebook, 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 Gather Baltimore Facebook. I can talk to 1,000 people in 1 second.
Willie Flowers?
Yeah, I mean, the nonprofit management side of this thing is that whether you like it or not, we're all in a business. So we have to focus specifically on development every day. Our Baltimore Road Race, this year our sponsor is Aetna, Maryland Physicians Care. It's a 5K, and that helps to fund what we do. In addition to that, we ask for money every day. Our board is progressive or aggressive at doing that. You know, all of our people, we fit fundraising in the conversation based on anything that we do, and we go after grants every day. So that giving part is something that we have to do to stay alive. But to inspire people, you can't inspire people by just asking. So we inspire them by what we do. The action of seeing food grow, the action of seeing people who would not run a race in their lives run up and down Park Heights Avenue is marketing. In addition to that, all that we do, you know, and I don't miss an opportunity to ask. Our website is phcha.org. You can go on there and donate.
Denise Jones Dorsey.
The giving directs the change, or the change directs the giving. The change that we seek at My Brother's Keeper is self-empowerment. We are seeking a food security system. We're seeking nutritious food for all of us. Therefore, we ask our givers to support that kind of change.
That was Denise Jones Dorsey, who's executive director of My Brother's Keeper. You also heard Willie Flowers, executive director of the Park Heights Community Health Service, Christian Metzger, executive director of the Franciscan Center of Baltimore, and Arthur Morgan, founder of Gather Baltimore. If you have thoughts about what you heard on today's show, please write us at steinershow@gmail.com. And please also visit the brand new soundbitesradio.org to hear today's show and podcast our past shows. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. The Mark Steiner Show and Soundbites are a production of the Center for Emerging Media, made possible in part by a grant from the Town Creek Foundation. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer at WEAA is Andre Melton. Our engineer at Public Radio Delmarva is Christopher Rank. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and find out information from the interviews we are doing on this program, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcasts on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and for WSDL 90.7 FM and WSCL 89.5 FM, Delmarva Public Radio,
I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.